It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Roger Chang joins us, along with Harry McCracken from Time Magazine and Father Robert Ballister, to talk about the week's tech news. Harry will have a report from All Things D, and we reveal the In-N-Out secret menu. Yes, you don't want to miss a very special This Week in Tech.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 408, recorded June 2nd, 2013. Knock, knock, knock. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC from Citrix connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer. And from your iPad and iPhone, too. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone and enter TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, and we are talking about the week's tech news with a great panel. As always, starting all the way to the left with the man in the screen and the collar. It's Mr. Father Robert Ballister, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Robert's shutting down his lab as he moves out here to the West Coast. So that's everything behind you has to go.
Everything has to be packed up. In fact, this is pretty much all that's left in the lab. I've torn everything else down. Most of it's already in California, so I'm just waiting until the beginning of July where I can officially throw the switch and make it dark.
You're not throwing stuff out? You're not gazelling it? You're just going to...
Oh, there's so much stuff that's leaving either left behind, thrown out. I kid you not, last week I shipped out half a ton
what?
Of gear back to manufacturers. Half a ton.
Oh, back to the manufacturers, not to mm-hmm. not to keep. Yeah.
No. That's one of the nice things about moving every once in a while. You kind of divest. You get rid of all the stuff. The theory is get rid of anything that I haven't actually seen for a year.
The chumby guy said, hey, we don't want it back, Robert. You really? Thanks. What are we going to do with this now? Anyway, great to have you. Robert Ballister, also here, my old buddy, Roger Chang, used to be at the Screensavers. Now he's at Revision 3 producing Techzilla. And what else do you do?
Techzilla, HD Nation, and Jim's Talk Show.
Is it called Jim's Talk Show?
No, it's called Downloaded.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Jim Lauterbach, the CEO. Yes. How's things going now that you're part of Discovery?
It's good. It's been really busy. They've just launched a new channel or network called Test Tube at testtube.com. And the sentence on it is essentially if Discovery Channel came out and was geared online for millennials.
If you'd started on the internet, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Testtube.com. How cool. Are you going to get to work on that a little bit?
Potentially. It's cool. There's a lot of great stuff on there. And, I really encourage anyone who's super into science and kind of any of these curiosity stuff that you're interested. Actually, they have Tori. I think Tori from the Mythbusters has his own show coming up.
Wow, this is interesting. This kind of looks like a kind of a YouTube for Discovery.
Yeah.
How interesting.
One of the shows up there at the top with the scorpion is Distort, where David Prager...
is going to get stung by a scorpion in slow motion?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Because they wanted to get the slow motion action of a scorpion.
Oh, yeah. He has this new show that he does with Mauricio where they do stuff at super slow-mo.
Yep. With a Phantom camera.
What camera they're using? The Phantom? How slow? Like, is it 20,000 frames? What is
it? 100.
100,000? Wow. But why, David, you shouldn't let a scorpion sting you. It's not a good... That's David's apartment, by the way.
Yes.
They shoot this in his house. Did he survive the scorpion sting?
He had.
I thought they're poisonous.
He was in the office the other day, so I assume.
Oh,
it was...
no, don't show it. Oh, God, that's horrible. Also with us from Time Magazine, Harry McCracken, the Technologizer. Great to have you, Harry.
Great to be here, Larry.
And I owe you a debt of gratitude because Time Magazine, at your particular section of it, named us one of the top 50 websites of the year. Thank you.
Thank you. I kind of recused myself from that decision.
Did you? But you didn't fight for us? You said, well, I'm not going to say anything.
I was happy to see it, but as you'll notice, I didn't write it up myself. Some of my colleagues were equally enthusiastic about the idea.
Well, we're very grateful. That's very nice. It came as somewhat of a shock to me.
I think we were shocked that you had never been on. You've been doing this long before I got there, and I think we were surprised you hadn't been on before.
I was surprised that you'd even heard of me, so thank you.
Aww.
I appreciate that. I want to start off, I hate to start off with sad news, but it is appropriate. Oculus Rift has been getting such great reviews. I just got my developer kit this week. This was a Kickstarter project, raised more than $1 million last year to make a virtual reality helmet that many have said this is the first time it really works. It's really cool. But what's so sad about it is the 33-year-old co-founder of Oculus Rift, Andrew Rysik, got hit by a car, a hit and run during a police chase in Irvine, or actually Santa Ana, and had died. So a huge loss. Apparently it was some gang members who were being chased by the cops. He was crossing the street. They ran a red light and they just plowed him down. I don't know what will happen to Oculus Rift as a result. I'm sure they'll continue on because they've got an amazing technology. But boy, that is a terrible, terrible loss to the tech community. 33 years old. 33 years old. So young. So I'm going to keep the Oculus Rift. We did a review. If you want to see our review, Tony Wang got his. And have you played with it?
I have not.
It's awesome. It's kind of amazing. Like real time. You turn your head and it's just perfect. Anyway, I hope they keep doing this. But just a great tragedy. Tragedy of another kind for photographers in Chicago. And I've been, I'm really curious what you guys are going to say about this. I've been getting a lot of email and tweets about it. The Chicago Sun-Times has fired their staff reporters and 28 photographers. They fired them on Friday. And this is where it gets weird. Apparently, the reporters for the writing reporters, the written reporters for the newspaper are going to be trained in iPhonography. They're apparently expected to pick up the slack and take pictures with their cameras.
Sign of the times.
Well, that's what, this is what intrigued me about this, that so many people were up in arms about this. And I, of course, when people get fired, it's terrible. But this is a measure of the fact that newspapers are just dying.
Well,
I don't hear that when 28 reporters get fired.
It's interesting because there's a parallel in television news, especially local news, where a lot of camera guys, a lot of studio guys got axed as soon as they started automating the studios with robot. If you've never seen robot cameras where you can remote.
They're scary because they are fast and they're heavy. Oh, yeah. And if you get in the way, you can get clobbered.
And one of the things, especially if you're in the business and you're applying for a job, you'll notice that a lot of the listings say they want a predator, which is essentially a producer right. That can edit as well as write and do all the other story, all the other stuff that used to be covered by two other individuals. So in a way, it's just a cost saving measure. Whether or not you'll get the same level of quality,
not from an iPhone, I can pretty much guarantee you. But I agree with you. I thought this was very interesting because when reporters are laid off, 100 reporters are laid off when Rupert Murdoch's Daily went under. Nobody goes, oh, my God, this is horrible. Look what's happening to newspapers.
Reporters do, but I don't think actual normal people do.
But the internet community got very up in arms about the photographers getting fired. I saw Trey Ratcliffe and others writing about this, very upset.
Well, you want both. You want both pros using great equipment. But if you are a journalist today, you should be taking photos as well. You should be shooting video. You should be doing all kinds of stuff. You can't just be a word person.
Dave McDean, our chat room, informs me the Metropolitan Opera fired their entire ballet company this week. Not one word in the press. But I think it's because we identify with photographers. Photographers are kind of the new heroes of the geek of new media, right?
Are they?
And so these 28 guys, by the way, of all the people who could possibly be fired at a newspaper, the photographers are the most likely to find work immediately, right?
Oh, yeah. You would switch topics. You wouldn't be shooting a news story. You'd shoot a wedding or a birthday party.
But there's got to be work for you. Not a lot of work for a compositor.
Well, that's the thing. Is like even some of these photographers probably have some editing, compositing, post-production skills on photos, because you cannot survive, especially in today's environment, on just being good at one particular aspect of your job. You want to be able to maybe not be incredibly good at everything, but right. at least competent, because you don't want to be in a position where the company's looking to save a few dollars and looking at some, well, you know, can you edit? I mean, you're a great anchor person, but can you edit too? Because
right.
it'd save us a lot of money, and, you know, it will hire the new guy who comes at half the rate.
Chris Markport. Yeah, go ahead.
This is the business that we're in, right? I mean, this is what Twit does. This is what new media does. We have figured out that the work, the production work that used to take millions of dollars and a huge studio to do, we can now do not on the cheap, but for, you know, with a much different type of crew, different type of equipment. The same thing happens to photography. The newspapers have realized camera phones or, you know, prosumer cameras have become so good, and amateur photographers get so many different angles that they can essentially get the same coverage. They can get the same material, the same content that they need at a much lower price. So in essence, if you're going to be blaming the newspaper, you should be blaming content creators like us and amateur content creators.
And Craigslist.
Change the game.
Just, you
and
know,
Craigslist,
you
would just completely undermine the entire financial structure.
You would essentially be blaming everyone that has a piece of technology that allows them to capture a still image, a moving image, and recording audio. I mean, think about the last three big news stories where most of the content came from people not associated with the press. I mean, the soldier in London that right. was hacked to death, a lot of those videos.
There were iPhone videos.
iPhone videos. Yeah. The Boston bombing, those were all captured yeah. either by CCTVs yeah. or
photojournalists are important, maybe right. one, arguably the most important form of journalism today, since we are in a much. Vince Lefore, who is a great photographer, wrote a blog post, How to Ensure Your Extinction. Look at what newspapers are doing. And he says, you know, he's talking about we're in the heyday of photography. He says, well, sarcastically, teenagers are clearly reading 300 to 1,200 word articles on newspaper websites on a regular basis. They're not. They're looking at pictures, right? And you look at what the Boston Globe does with the big picture, which is wonderful. Clearly, they're making money on their photojournalists. So maybe really the short-sightedness was that the Chicago Sun-Times couldn't figure out a way to make these guys pay.
I'm kind of astounded they had 28.
28?
That's a lot.
Unbelievable.
You had to go from what sounds like a pretty plush photography staff to nothing. It must be kind of jarring. And I am kind of curious what their front page will look like.
If it's iPhone photos.
Yeah, if it's iPhone photos.
It's a lot of Instagram.
Non-professionals.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, Leo, you know this. You don't necessarily want to cut out, you know, try to bridge everything with one person, but you want to pick and choose where you have that one or two individuals that are really good at photography and send them out on that story. And everything else, like, oh, yeah, you're covering, you know, the latest, you know, city council, you know, debate on, you know, whether or not a new park needs a tree or something. You can send someone with an iPhone and cover that. But if it's something that, you know, is going to make the front page or something that's incredibly timely, yeah, you want to send out the best person for that job.
Vince is arguing they should have fired more reporters and kept the photographers. He might have a point there. The photographers in this day and age might be more important. But I think, you know, go ahead.
Can I ask a question? And that is there still the room for the pure photographer? I mean, is it now? No, you have to be a media creator. You have to be a content creator. You can't just do photography. You need to do videography. You need to do editing. Like Roger said, you have to have the talent along the entire spectrum. It's you can't any longer just be the guy with the great eye. You have to be able to deliver on many different levels in the new media world, right? I mean,
that's a good point. In fact, you might have hit the nail on the head. The guy who did this, Tim Knight, was the publisher at Newsday when they did exactly the same thing. In 2008, they fired 20 people from their staff, but they allowed them, and this may happen at the Chicago Sun-Times, to reapply for multimedia jobs. So they allowed them to say, okay, you know, we're not – still photos are – look at all the attention the New York Times got for that snow – the avalanche piece that they did. It was a multimedia piece. It wasn't just stills. It was video. It was moving. Clearly newspapers are maybe looking more to the web and more to being multimedia producers. So maybe that's what's going on. So I don't think anybody in their right mind would say we are in a less visual age. What is Time? Does Time Magazine have staff?
We have both.
A lot of freelance.
A lot of it's done by freelance. We have astounding photography done by people who've done it for decades and have won all kinds of awards. But when I went to the D conference last week, I was taking photos and putting them up too. So I don't, they're not mutually exclusive. You want to have the best possible photographers doing work with the best possible equipment, and people just sort of telling the story with whatever they have at hand at
Use
the moment.
It all. Well, you look at CNN. I often wonder if CNN wants to replace all its reporters with iReporters. And
CNN's really bad.
Yeah, so that's a bad example, I think.
I just avoid watching it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
But it's interesting is because, you know, for years, people have saying, like, you know, newspapers are dying out and, you know, online web is going to be the future. And it's kind of 50-50. Yes, that's true. But also, I mean, you still need experienced reporters who know and understand a story. One of the things that I used to read The Economist a lot, and within the past 5 years, there's been a significant turnover in their writers. They shifted.
Really?
Like a lot of them retired, and they got on a bunch of new ones. But, I mean, the quality of the writing is still good, but the analysis that The Economist used to be famous for, it has been at least in my personal opinion, has been lacking. And most of it, occasionally you'll still get Baghdad or one of the columnists who write a really good piece. But overall, I mean, just the quality of the information isn't there that I would say it was there 10 years ago.
Well, and it's not exactly information. It's analysis, isn't it? It's easy, maybe not that easy, but it doesn't require nearly as much skill to gather facts as it does to analyze and present and argue and give people an understanding as opposed to just a list of facts.
That's one thing that I think most people would agree. When you watch the news or you read about it, there's very little analysis. They'll throw you out numbers, they'll throw you out locations, and they'll give you a couple of sound bites from important people who said something. But, you know, other than that, it gives you kind of the 500-foot view of what's happening, but doesn't really give you a good appreciation of what's going on.
And I would argue in the internet age that facts are a commodity at this point.
Well, they're a total commodity.
You can get it. It's a Google search.
There are exceptions. If they're facts coming from somebody on the ground in Syria, that is not a commodity.
Investigative reporting.
But certainly for tech stuff, most of the facts are a commodity, and it's the analysis that makes or breaks a story.
Right.
And my organization runs several worldwide news organizations, newspapers, magazines, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found, at least in the last 5 years, is we've been shutting down more and more of them because they haven't been able to shift to the new model. We have one magazine that's run out of New York, was award-winning for many, many years. But the problem is they operated under the old model, which is you had a staff of writers and investigators who basically would write one or two hard-hitting stories a month. And now we're telling them, look, you got to be filing five stories a day.
Wow.
It's just numbers. We need that much productivity out of them in order to make the publication stay in the black. And we all lament the fact that, oh my gosh, well, we can't hit as hard as we used to. We can't investigate as much as we used to. But unfortunately, nobody has figured out a way to really monetize hard-hitting news versus tweets.
Well, and this is, you know, we talk about this a lot with Jeff Jarvis on This Week in Google, because he's a journalism professor, but also a media critic. And we need people out there gathering facts, because we need the facts as the grist for the mill so that we can start to understand it. So we do need reporting, especially investigative reporting. A place like Syria, though, people on the ground might do a better job than an embedded reporter, right?
Certainly in some cases.
That's what we saw in Egypt, for instance, during the uprisings. We're going to take a break. Harry McCracken is here from The Technologizer, from Time Magazine. Roger Chang from Discovery and Techzilla, my old friend. And of course, Father Robert Ballister from This Week in Enterprise Tech. And new shows coming to Twit soon. We're working on right now. We got plans for you, Robert. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. My beloved. This is one of my favorite things, and it has been for more than a decade now. I started listening to audiobooks from Audible in 2000. When I was commuting to the Screensavers, and it was a 2-hour-a-day drive, sometimes more if traffic was bad. And I tell you, I would have strangled somebody if I hadn't found Audible.com.
I agree. I remember transcribing a lot of your voice memos.
Yeah, you were going to strangle me. For a while, I was dictating in the car, wasn't I? I forgot about that. You had to do that?
Yes.
It was fun. So sorry.
No, it was.
And then I think we should do a show about the 386 whether it's going to be important in the scheme. What?
You got upset at someone who cut you off while you were during dictating. You're dictating, and you made a really lewd comment.
You're kidding. And you're listening, and you go, whoa. God, I forgot I used to do that. Thank God for Audible. You never had to transcribe anymore, and I didn't have to yell obscenities out the window. It was literally a lifesaver. Now you can be an Audible listener yourself. In fact, we've got two free books for you. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum Plan. That's the two-book-a-month subscription. By the way, with subscriptions, you also get either the daily abridged audio edition of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. You get to pick, which is a great thing for listening to the car. I just saw this. The Audible Audiobook Awards every year. They're not just Audible. They're all the audiobooks. They were awarded in New York City this week, and an interesting choice. This was the book of the year, a classic Graham Greene novel. Actually, one of my favorite, The End of the Affair, but Colin Firth narrates it. Hmm. One of the things Audible's doing is getting these great actors to enact these. In fact, this was an Audible production. Let me play a little of Colin Firth.
A story has no beginning.
Oh, sorry, it's so loud. Hey, my audio's working.
Arbitrarily, one chooses that moment of experience from which to look
back. I'll turn it down.
Or from which to look ahead. I say one chooses with the inaccurate pride of a professional writer who, when he's
wasn't he King George? King? He was Bertie.
Praised for his
technical. Who was he in the King's Speech?
But do I, in fact, of my own will?
I guess he's fixed the stuttering problem.
Wet January night on the Common in 1946.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. He's the perfect guy to narrate a Graham Greene novel. Dustin Hoffman narrates Being There by Jerzy Kosinski. Wouldn't that be awesome? Audible's doing these recordings by great performers. Jennifer Connelly doing The Sheltering Sky. Claire Danes doing The Handmaid's Tale. Now that I'm going to listen to because I'm a Homeland fan. The Handmaid's Tale's a great book. Diane Keaton, Slouching Towards Bethlehem. Nicole Kidman doing the immortal Virginia Woolf to the Lighthouse. These are great classics narrated by some of the best actors of our time. That's just one of many reasons to go to Audible. They've got fiction and nonfiction. I listen to a lot of biography, a lot of history. The challenge is going to be picking two books. But you've got two free books coming your way. If you go to audible.com/twit2, that gives you 30 days of Audible. Your first two credits are free. You can cancel at any time. Those books are yours to keep. But I have a feeling you're going to want to stick around. Anne Hathaway reading The Wizard of Oz. What do you think? I love Anne. She's my imaginary girlfriend, you know.
I'm trying to imagine the voice reading The Wizard of Oz.
Imagine no longer. Let's listen. First, I have to press play.
We cannot be far from the road of yellow brick now, remarked the Scarecrow as he stood beside the girl. For we have come nearly as far as the river carried us away. The Tin Woodman was about to reply.
I think it's a little sped up.
A low growl. And turning his head,
is that sped
which
up?
Worked beautifully on hinges, he saw
I think
a
it's
strange...
something wrong with it.
She's
been a munchkin.
Your laptop is so overblown, I'm trying to bring
it's
down the level.
It's too fast.
So it's crunchy.
Oh, that's what it is. I'm too hot.
Yeah, it's
let me
long.
Turn it down. I'll turn it down.
So it doesn't
I'm
sound
using a new
smooth.
Laptop. Oh, yeah, it's all the way up. Let's just turn it down. Turn it down. Now let's try it. All right, let me see how this sounds.
Strange beast come bounding over the grass towards them. It was indeed... A great
still
yellow
sounds a little
wild
speed
cat.
Up, sped up.
And the woodman thought it
might
must
be a flash. Chasing. Yeah, it's definitely a flash
oh,
problem.
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
I don't think Anne Hathaway sounded like this. Maybe she's being a munchkin. I don't know.
Maybe she blew. She was had a bunch of balloons for a birthday party.
Oh, do me a favor. Will you go listen? Go to audible.com and listen to The Wonderful Wizard of Oz and tell me if it's sped up.
Okay.
Not you.
Oh.
The people at home. People who are not yet members of Audible. In fact, while you're there, join Audible. Audible.com/twit2. We thank them for their support. A great place. By the way, that audiobook, 99 cents when you buy the Kindle edition, and then it's whisper synced so you can follow along. This is a great way to get kids reading. You give them the Kindle, and as Anne Hathaway's reading, they see the words highlighted.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that cool?
That's great.
And because of whisper sync, you can read it and then start listening to Audible where you picked up. It's synergy. What a word. Audible.com. We thank them for their support. So you were at All Things D.
I was.
Harry McCracken, the technologizer. That seemed like, was it a good year to go this year? You had some big names.
It's a great event. They always have big names. Walt Mossberg and Kara Swisher do the interviews. They don't shy away from tough questions.
Tim Cook's appearance was kind of the keynote, wasn't it? It was kind of the highlight of the thing.
He's kind of the leadoff guy in last year as well.
Leadoff's a better word because I think many agree Elon Musk was the highlight of the event.
He was good. I mean, Tim Cook is never going to say anything fascinating unless he's announcing new products, which he's not going to do.
He's not going to do it in All Things D.
In All Things D. So,
especially in 10 days, he's going to be taking the stage on his own.
Steve Jobs could get away with not announcing things and still being interesting, but that's tough to do. So I wasn't expecting him to announce anything great, and so I wasn't surprised when he didn't and was sort of treading water for the next 10 days.
It was kind of amazing because all the tech blogs, The Verge and Engadget and Gizmodo, were live blogging as if he's going to say anything of newsworthy.
Well, I heard it was just, he was like the most incredibly boring and uninteresting
person. He's a CEO. Good CEO says nothing.
Why do they have him on that?
Well, I think there was some hope that he might do, because he's in the past hinted at stuff.
Did they spike his water? Nobody says
that's
something.
Not water, Mr. Cook.
He did hint, but he hinted at the same stuff he's been hinting at for a while.
Nothing
such
new.
As we love TV. There are big opportunities in TV.
And Kara pushed him and said, is there going to be a TV? And he wouldn't say.
No.
He said, Google's glass is not mainstream. Well, of course not. It's $1,500. That's not an insight.
It doesn't work with people who need corrective eyewear and don't want to use contacts.
Like the people at this table. He did say, though, that Apple's very interested in the space. But didn't say that they're doing anything in the space.
As he has said in other venues.
Was there anything? I mean, you're sitting there, you're looking at him. Was there anything? No.
It was sort of, he was repeating stuff he said because he's not, because he does have lots of stuff to talk about, but not at that event.
The first question from Walt was about the stock. And then Kara says, or can we start with taxes? Walt says, is Apple in trouble? Tim Cook says, no. And then they move on. It's just, so nothing to say. What, June 10th isn't so far away. It's a week from tomorrow. That's the WWDC. There's some things we are pretty sure we know. iOS 7 will be at least shown, if not. Even if they don't give us a ship date.
New version of OS 10, too, I think.
They said they would say something about that.
They'll at least have some details.
What kind of animal is it? What cat? It's got to be a big cat, right?
Well, didn't they use them already?
I think they ran out. Because cougar is a mountain lion.
Yes. Well, the big cats are like the tiger. They already did that.
They got a tiger.
Cheetah. That was one of their... pre-build units or whatever.
Do something else. I mean, maybe
they'll move on the canines.
Right.
The Bernard or the St. Bernard. Mastiff.
OS 10 Mastiff.
That sounds rather imposing.
I was rooting for Liger.
Ocelots aren't big cats. They're actually, ocelots aren't any bigger than a house cat.
Chat room thinks coon cat. Tabby.
Carkle. Those are medium-sized cats. Yeah. That's like a bobcat size.
I'd like to see them move to house cats.
Mac OS 10 Maru. That's good. In the box.
Garfield.
Grumpy Cat. OS 10 Grumpy Cat. No. We will see an OS 10 10.9. We don't know what it'll be. Apple's got to be looking a little bit at Microsoft saying, gee, that thing about moving the desktop to a tablet didn't work so well for Microsoft. There's the grumpy cat. Thank you, Chad. It's OS 10 FU. Oh, grumpy cat. Do you think Apple might retrench a little bit? They've been moving in the direction of making OS 10, the desktop operating system, more like their iOS portable operating system. Full screen apps. But then Microsoft's Metro didn't go over so well. So maybe...
it depends. I mean, if they introduce an iMac with a touchscreen...
Oh, do you think they will?
I think there's a real
debate about that. We talk about that on Mac Break Weekly all the time. I like touch.
It needs to be an option, because if you're going to put this OS on a machine that doesn't have a touchscreen interface, that metaphor is kind of clunky. Like, I have Windows 8, and I immediately ditch it as soon as I get into it because it doesn't work with
the
mouse.
It's very frustrating.
But if you're essentially going to start rolling out machines that support it in some fashion, I don't know. I don't know if that actually works in a desktop environment.
I mean, if you look at how well Windows touch screen machines are selling, I don't think
how well are they selling?
Not well, as far as I can tell. I think the industry is still trying to convince Windows 8, even people who are excited about Windows 8, that they want a Windows 8 touch machine. What I would like to see Apple do is kind of the opposite. I would like them to see them take iOS and put it on a laptop of some sort.
You know, some people are making noises about Android laptops. I saw some manufacturer doing an Android laptop. That's kind of an intriguing idea. Instead of trying to take a desktop OS and make it more mobile, just take your mobile OS.
Yeah, I mean, Android and iOS are already designed to work well with touch. It's way easier to give something that already works well with touch a physical keyboard than to go the other way around. This is why, I mean...
HP's making the Slatebook X2, which is an Android laptop.
HP is doing Android laptops that look quite a bit like their Windows Ultrabooks.
But it's very natural touch. People who use Android are going to be fairly comfortable with it. Is it as functional as a desktop OS?
Well, the issue with Android on any thing larger than a phone is not enough apps that take advantage of a large screen well.
Well, we saw that when the first Android tablets came out. There was just a dearth of apps, although it's been a while now, and I think it's much better.
You can do a great battery life on an Android laptop easier than you can with Windows
it's ARM,
right now.
Right?
As well, we'll change that. You should see Windows laptops with much better battery life coming up shortly.
Right. I like to approach it Go ahead.
I like to approach it from a different angle, and that is, if you look at what touch adds to a desktop, if you're trying to sell a touch desktop, it's actually a hard sell. It's even a harder sell than selling a touch laptop. And I use a touch laptop. I enjoy it. I actually find myself reaching up to the screen just naturally.
You and I use the Acer S7.
Exactly. Yeah, 7. But I don't think that's how you should be looking at it. You're not selling a touch desktop. You're selling a desktop that has touch enabled. It does add another dimension. And I think eventually we will get to the point where you're just going to expect everything to have touch. I have seen my nieces and my nephews and my cousins, who are all younger, moving to a desktop after having worked on an iPad or an Android tablet basically their entire young lives, and then being frustrated. I see them reaching up to the screen and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So I think there is that to be said about touch, which is it's not going to be a super selling feature, but it's going to be expected. It's going to be like the ability to do 3D in TVs. Most of us aren't going to buy a TV because it does 3D. It's just going to be baked in because, well, why not? That's the cost of doing business.
It is. It's an option. I have a mouse. I have a trackpad. I have a keyboard. And I could touch the screen. And I notice with touch devices that I will do some combination of all of them, depending on how I feel. I might tap a button. I tend to forget, actually, on the Acer. I tend to forget I have touch.
I think part of it is like, you know, when you got to a GUI desktop, the mouse was the addition to your keyboard.
Right.
With touch, I mean,
Isn't it more natural than a mouse, though? It's more intuitive.
It is, but like when I have a layout like a traditional laptop, my first inclination is to go with that.
Right.
I actually the Lenovo Yoga, where you can convert it into and you kind of put in a little tent mode where you can touch the screen. It works a lot better that way than if you actually have the keyboard out in front of you.
And you're using as Windows RT?
Windows 8.
8.
So it makes more sense, and I think part of it is kind of the man-machine interface physically.
The bet that Microsoft made was that computing is moving to tablets. And that's why, I mean, I think that's why they made Windows 8 so tablet-centric, so touch-centric. They really, you get the feeling they don't think desktop computing has as much.
But at the same time, they're trying to bridge.
They have to bridge it.
They have to bridge. And the thing, unlike OS X, Windows has this huge legacy footprint. You have literally millions upon millions of users who still run a traditional desktop. Some of them still have a CRT. You need to.
Is that Lauterbach still using that CRT?
No. Oh, all right. My dad does. But it's one of those things. You know, when you're a company with a smaller footprint, you can be a lot more nimble. But if you have to carry all these other people with you, with all their legacy devices, you can't be as well. I'm going to just cut you off right here.
Right.
You know, everyone just used Windows 7, and then everyone else with a touchscreen.
I have to say, the reaction to 8.1, it felt like they were doing that. This is it. It's our way or the highway. They didn't really listen to people. It's funny, Steven Sinofsky, who was later severed from Microsoft, we don't know how exactly, the guy behind Windows 8, was also at All Things D talking, and was a little snide. First of all, he said, I'm using an HTC One phone, not a Windows phone. And he tweeted something that was very... Delphic. He said something like, you have to listen to users, but not too much.
I mean, Steve Jobs said something very similar. It's like most people don't know what they want.
Well, and this is a subject we've talked about a lot on Windows Weekly. I think Steve Jobs poisoned the water because he did so well at Apple, not listening to users, saying our way or the highway, that companies now like Microsoft and Google are saying, well, gee, that worked for Steve. Maybe we should try that. Let's stop listening. Well, yeah, and then you get Windows 8.1 and everybody's pissed. Do you use it and like it?
I use Windows 8 and I actually don't like the tablet interface. Unless I'm on a device like the Lenovo Yoga that supports it out of the box. And it's one of those things where I think the kind of device you use will dictate the kind of interface you prefer to use. I mean, remember when they used to cram keyboards on the smartphones and you had to pop them out, the Sidekick and whatever? They worked real well and worked well for the BlackBerry, but as soon as you could get more screen real estate and then have a functional virtual keyboard, everyone's like, you know, I don't really need a keyboard. I'm, you know, this predictive text typing, you know, correcting my typos as I go along works just as well as a physical keyboard. And so I think part of it is maybe we just lose the keyboard at some point.
I would prefer to lose a mouse. Maybe not, though. Keyboard is 19th century, isn't it?
But we're getting to the point where it doesn't really matter. This was actually the biggest thing I took from the Xbox One announcement, and that was that you had a stripped down Windows 8 for the media side and a game operating system both running in VMs. Microsoft has really been pushing VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure, which is an easy way to say that is the ability to take anything, your Windows desktop, your OS X desktop, put it up in the cloud and bringing it up on any screen, any device. It doesn't matter. It could be your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, your phone. That's what most of the larger manufacturers are pushing to. They want this ecosystem where you can work the way you want on the device that you want, and you don't really have to worry about moving from one format to another. If you want to work with a keyboard, fine. If you find working with a touch screen, you can do that. And you can be using all the same products, all the same programs, the same desktop that you're used to at work, at home, etc. That's a different way of looking at touch, non-touch, one format or another format. Now you're just looking at the screen.
What about things like the Leap and other non-standard interfaces? Is there something that might take over?
The Leap
is a little thing you put in front of the keyboard, and then now you can do Tom Cruise style
Minority Report
gestures.
You know, and that's the thing is it sounds really cool. I mean, I looked at it and I've actually never tested it out in person, but I mean the thinking behind it's really cool in that you can just kind of touch the air, but after a while, I mean, having used the Weed and every other kind of weird gesture device, your arms kind of get tired and you just want to put them down on something and type. I know it sounds.
Mouse kind of work.
And that's why people are so reluctant to move because, yeah, I can be up there and I can go through my aerobics routine while I'm typing. But, you know, after a while, have you ever tried keep up your arms up for any long length of time?
It's like a minute is hard.
It gets fatiguing and, you know. Anyone, the amount of typing you do in a day, do it in the air and see how long you would last versus, hey, let me put my palms on the top of my computer keyboard and I can type.
Are you going to buy a Leap Motion? They're not too expensive.
No, it's pretty cheap, and HP will be building it into systems.
Oh, will they? Oh, that's interesting.
One of the cooler things...
HP is really being a little innovative all over the place here.
One of the cooler things at D was this company called Athier Labs. They have 3D glasses, so you can see 3D images. You can also see what's around you. It runs Android. And it also essentially has Kinect or Leap-type technology built in. So you can see something on these glasses and then, you know, gesture in front of you so you can touch things. Which are part of the augmented reality view.
So it's like Tony Stark reaching in Iron Man, doesn't he?
You know,
it's
interesting. I'm wondering how much of this is just because we've relied so much on a QWERTY keyboard layout. Like it's essentially a carryover from the typewriter. Well, carryover from typewriter. What if you do what stenographers do? I actually had a class with a classmate. She was deaf, and they had a stenographer for her to take notes. And one of the things you notice is that they make do with a much smaller keyboard set, but they can still type out full, you know, full paragraphs.
Maybe steep learning curve, but they're a lot faster, aren't they?
They're a lot faster. The fewer keys that you need to press,
right?
And would actually lend itself, I think, a lot more than.
Well, what that shows you is there are better ways than the mouse and the keyboard, but we are so entrenched with the mouse and the keyboard that it's going to take something unusual to convince people to change. And it's going to be, I think it's got to be easy to use because we know that you can be 10 times faster if you use a stenography machine. We know that. People do it all the time, but it's just hard to learn. Who learns it? Nobody. Except
stenographers.
Court reporters. So, I want to talk more about D in just a second. Love having you here, Robert Ballasser. When are you moving?
I start my move at the start of August, as soon as I get back from Rio.
From where?
Rio de Janeiro in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. And why are you going to Rio?
We've got this big event. It's a church thing. We've got 5 million students from around the world to come in to go see the new Pope.
Wow. Oh, you're going with the Pope?
Yeah.
Now, are you going with the Pope or are you going to see the Pope?
Are you riding the Pope appeal?
More with than to see.
Yeah, it's work time for me.
Have you met the new Pope? I know you knew Benedict pretty well. You'd have a beer together, just hang out. Yeah, but have you met Francis yet?
I have. He's a very good man, very humble man, and he's funny. He's got a great sense of humor.
I have to say, I kind of admire what I've heard about him. He doesn't live in the fancy papal apartments. He lives in a little apartment for visiting priests at the Vatican. And he was kind of right on. He was talking about the 1% and the 99%. I mean, I think this guy's kind of interesting.
He's interesting, and he's got a lot of people. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. He's got a lot of people in the Vatican really scared because it sounds like he's actually going to be cleaning house.
Uh-oh.
He doesn't want the old stigma of the church to be hanging open them.
I think that's not a bad thing. That should happen every once in a while. It's for any organization, and an organization that's several centuries old. How old is the Catholic Church? A couple of thousand years. When is it? What do they credit at the beginning? From St. Peter or
the official word is the church has been around since time immemorial.
That means I don't know. I can't remember. All right. Anyway, it's great to have you, Robert. He's going to be a little closer, so we're going to see a lot more of him at the Brick House, and I couldn't be happier about that. Roger Cheng, also here, and from the Technologizer blog and Time magazine. What's it called? Techland, right? What is that what they...
You know, officially, it's not... Time Tech is the official name of the tech section. But if you look at our Twitter account, that's still Techland, and around the shop, we call it Techland, too.
All right.
That's the overarching... That was the overarching name for all our tech coverage.
Mr. Techland.
Technologizer is my stuff.
Tom Merritt has been, we do this great show Monday through Friday, if you like tech news, where you can keep up on the latest. In fact, we're thinking of doing, and I'd love to get some input on this, maybe an evening kind of update as well. So Tom starts the day with TNT Tech News Today every morning, 10 a.m. Pacific. It's kind of not morning if you're not in the West Coast. On the East Coast, about 1 in the afternoon, 1800 UTC. And they do all the news. And then we're thinking maybe we should do a little wrap-up at the end of the day, just a quickie. Anyway, I'd love to know what you think about that. Let's see what Tom's going to be covering in the week ahead. Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Monday, June 3rd, we're expecting Mojang's Scrolls, the latest from the Minecraft creator, to release in open beta. Tuesday, June 4th, kicks off Computex in Taipei. Big day, Wednesday, June 5th. TiVo yanks its free version of its PC software. The HTC One and BlackBerry Q10 launching on T-Mobile USA. Le Web London kicks off. YouTube's One channel becomes the standard. And Augmented World Expo is taking place in Santa Clara, California. Thursday, June 6th, the BlackBerry Q10 comes to Verizon. Google Mebo Bar becomes inactive. Such a sad day. Microsoft is launching Azure Cloud Computing Services in China, and Inside Social Apps happens in San Francisco. Friday, June 7th, one event only, Microsoft's Surface Pro tablet, that 256 gigabyte that comes with Office, launches in Japan. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
I'm sorry, I launched the Scrolls trailer. I wanted to see. It's a card game. Are you excited, Chad? Because you're a big Minecraft fan.
I am. So, yeah, this is a Behind the Guise of Minecraft.
But it's a card game.
It's like an online trading card game.
Oh, it's an online card game.
Well, yeah, so you can play with friends, and you have your own board, and you collect your own deck, and...
Is Pikachu in it?
And I don't think so.
Because I'm not playing if there's no Pikachu. No.
Yeah, but there... Mm-hmm. There may be the thing that's hanging out behind Father Robert on there. I'm not sure.
The Nabus.
Yeah, I'm actually not incredibly sure what this thing. Yeah, I'm just going to keep this on the shot.
Creepy, stop it.
I'm actually not sure what is going to be in the video game. They haven't really announced what it's going to be, and
it looks like chess meets card game, like Magic: The Gathering a little
bit. And you get to gather cards, and your deck builds over time, and so it looks like Magic: The Gathering.
This is really interesting because Notch is kind of, everybody agrees that Minecraft was this brilliant inspiration that came out of left field. I mean, who thought that all the kids would be wanting to play 8-bit graphic games?
Yeah.
And it's huge. How many copies of Minecraft has he sold?
I think 10 million.
I think it's something like 25 million if you count all the versions.
Right, yeah.
It's like, what, 20 bucks?
About 10 million for the PC version.
Right.
God.
Yeah.
Wait, quick question. Is this a card game that they turned into a video game, or is it starting out as a video game card game?
It's all video. Yeah.
I think it started.
Wow. Sui generis.
Are you saying this is like a Magic: The Gathering that got pulled over?
Right, like Pokemon became a video game, Magic became a video game. No, this is pure.
Yeah.
That's original, but with card trading elements.
I think this guy is amazing. We got to get Notch in somehow.
Right.
You know, it's funny. We were at E3 2 years ago, and I'm walking around, and a guy with a beard and a hat walks by. We got a camera crew. We're talking. And I saw him, but I didn't think about it. And the chat room's going crazy.
Yeah.
Notch, you just missed Notch. You just walked. And then we went in search of Notch, and we never found him.
Yeah. Yeah, that was for the PlayStation Vita announcement.
He just walked right by us.
And so, yeah, so this is statistic, which is just, as always, going as 10 million, but that's only the PC version.
Just the game.
That's only the PC version, and they've sold more on the mobile pocket edition and even more on the Xbox edition.
Right. I know this figure only because in last week's issue of Time Magazine, I have a feature on Minecraft.
It's pretty amazing phenomenon.
For which I went to Stockholm and visited Mojang and talked to Notch.
Oh, gosh. How was that?
Fun.
Are you a Minecraft player?
You know, I did not know a whole lot about Minecraft before I started working on this story. And it was fun to do something where I kind of learned from the ground up and got to go to Stockholm. And, I've met and talked to a lot of Minecraft players for the story, but I met even more people who have kids who are deeply into it. So if you don't play Minecraft, there's a pretty good chance you have younger people in your family who do. And it's so much more than just a game. There are all these educational implications. The United Nations is using it to help plan places that need improvement, like in Nairobi.
Wow.
They're trying to rebuild like parks that are really dilapidated. And
8-bit?
They're using Minecraft, and then they'll say...
Did you know that, Chad?
Chad's our host
of our Minecraft show, OMG Craft.
Right, yeah. And so, I mean, it's so simple because editing the game is part of the game, so it's not difficult...
Which was a brilliant, inspired move.
Right. It's not difficult to give people the tools so that they can make the game their own, and so this makes perfect sense. I actually haven't heard of this specific story.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardware design built into the internal wiring system within Minecraft. I mean, kids are learning and OR gates.
Oh,
and,
no, I've seen kids do calculators in Minecraft. They're computers. It's amazing.
Building hardware memory cells to keep their binary memory in check.
So good. So we shouldn't worry about the future generation. They're playing Minecraft and learning.
I'm getting back to Scrolls. Even the Mojang guys are not trying to build up too much excitement for their future games because they know it's going to be really hard to do 2, 3, 4, 5 games that have anything like the impact that Minecraft has.
So is it a Mojang effort or is it Notch doing his next thing? I mean, is it whole company behind it?
Scrolls is not Notch's game.
It's not Notch.
He's working on something called 10 to the Sea.
Oh, that's what he's... Because I remember hearing he was doing his own thing.
That is Notch's thing, and it sounds like it's going to be quite a while before that's out, but he has been releasing teasers.
It's an amazing story.
Right.
There it is.
And there's been rumors that he's completely, redone everything that is kind of on this website that he wasn't really super excited about how... Well, there's an ad, but... how things were
been up.
Yeah, he told me he was sort of having a creative crisis and was trying to get over it.
That's good.
Right.
You don't want it to be easy.
No.
It'd just be another Minecraft.
No.
All right. Very good. Tell me about Elon Musk at D. Because, I hear a lot of people say this is, you know, Tony Stark in Iron Man is kind of based on Elon Musk. This is our real life Elon Musk. He's launched a rocket. He's built the Tesla.
He's talking about the Hyperloop.
Yes.
What's the Hyperloop?
Well, Hyperloop.
Hyperloop. It's a way to get between Los Angeles and San Francisco in 30 minutes, supposedly.
We're building a train that'll do it in an hour and a half or 2 hours. He says, just forget that.
Actually, that train's probably going to take three or longer.
And it's going to take a lot of money, too.
We may not be around by the time they completed it.
Yeah.
Musk is great. I mean,
how does the loop work, though?
He said that he wants to get more attention for Tesla stuff right now, and when he's done with that, he will tell us what the deal is.
I imagine it's going to be a lot like a pneumatic tube, like the old kind. And you get in a little... No, you get in a little...
I don't want to be the first person in that thing.
Really, the only thing you need to work out is the amount
acceleration.
Of... Acceleration. Acceleration.
And deceleration. That's why it takes so long.
Yeah.
The middle part, you don't have to worry.
So,
they got to accelerate sort of a little slowly and decelerate a little slowly so you don't turn into gray goo.
Hey, you wouldn't turn into gray goo.
Yes, you would. You slam your head up against the back of the...
You'd be bruised.
Bruised?
You'd be bruised a lot.
You'd be a tomato.
If you Google around, there's an old theory that it would be possible to build an underground tube between the West Coast and the East Coast that would let you travel between them in 20 minutes.
Wow.
And maybe the Hyperloop is sort of based on some of these notions, but... You know, how many other tech CEOs would even dream of doing this stuff?
That's what I think that's why we admire him, right? That he's like Notch in some ways, that he's really kind of out of left field.
Didn't they have that in the remake of Total Recall? I think they called it The Fall.
Well,
that's right.
It was used in a number of science fiction
They fell
movies.
Through the middle of the Earth from northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere.
There's a bunch of movies
conveniently
that
ignoring the fact that there's a molten core in the middle that would melt anything.
It's not even
you
the
went
core,
through.
It's the mantle. You'd be burned alive.
Well, yeah. So the Hyperloop, apparently the technology already exists. It's just basically superconducting electromagnets.
And put in a vacuum. A little bullet and send you off.
You would have to do it in a vacuum. Otherwise, just the air friction alone would suck up all your power. Right.
And you have to build a tunnel. I mean, you're not doing above ground. Yeah. We get the tunnel machine over here and just let it go.
Well, it's the tunnel that's the hardest part, especially in the seismic area like California.
Yeah, you don't really want to go right through the San Andreas Fault.
VHST, a very high-speed transporter travel, is the notion here.
Wow.
I remember when I was in grade school and they said we were on the cusp of discovering materials that could give us room temperature superconducting material.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, 30 years later,
building
and we're still
tubes.
Trying to find room temperature superconducting material.
Right. Hey, it's good there's dreamers in the world. I was just thinking that in this discussion of input, you know, new input forms, there's been some thought that maybe innovation is dead or plateaued a little bit in the tech industry. But I don't know if that's true. There seems to be, look at Google Glass, look at the Leap Motion. I mean, there's some innovation happening.
I think there's a false belief that... advancement comes at a gradual, consistent pace.
Right.
When really what happens is it comes out in short
spurts. Yeah.
And so perhaps we're in that kind of low period before the next one. So, you know, it's the same, you know, people like assume evolution is a very slow, gradual.
We're in the refractory period between spurts.
Yeah. Got to wait for the next spurt.
Next time, you know, that's fine. Takes 5 minutes.
Lasso the next one.
We'll be back with more in just a moment. Our great panel here. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who do a great product called Go to My PC that anybody who works at an office is going to want to use because it really frees you from the chains that bind you to the office computer. Everything that you need is often at the office computer, corporate email, your OLAP cubes, your applications. With Go to My PC, you can be at work anywhere via your iPhone, your iPad, your Android device. It's easy to install. You don't need IT support. Uses NAT traversal, so you don't have to punch security holes in the firewall. And once you've installed it on, in fact, you could do that right. Why don't you do it? If you're at work, do it right now. Just go to visit the website, gotomypc.com, click the orange try it free button, use the promo code TWIT. You'll get 30 days free. then get the free apps for your tablet, your phone, and then just leave work. And then send your boss a note saying, I'm working really hard. Please don't bother me. And you could be like at the golf course or at home or in the pool or in a hotel, anywhere. Go to My PC Goes with you wherever you go. You could do anything you could do at your office computer, including send and receive email, run any program, access any network resource. Try it today. Orange button right there. See, it says try it free. But please, if you would, do me a favor, type in the promo code TWIT so they know that you heard about it on This Week in Tech. Go to My PC, offer code TWIT. What else? Anything else at All Things D that you noted, you remarked upon?
Motorola had a surprisingly good session.
Motorola? They mentioned the X Phone, didn't they?
Yeah, they talked about it in a fair amount of detail and about some of the sensors it will have and the fact that they're going to assemble it in Texas.
Good.
They talked about some crazy stuff like tattoos you can use instead of a password or instead of a fingerprint scan or even a vitamin you can eat, which turns your entire body into a system you can use to
say what? Stuff. Is that real or is that just...
According to them, it's not... Motorola has not created this stuff, but the stuff exists. And Motorola is supposedly kind of walled off from Google, so they have no advantages over other Android companies.
Yeah, Google has to say that so that, Nokia and everybody else won't get upset or whoever it is.
But apparently Nokia, they have been charged with dreaming big. And their market share is so tiny with phones right now, they don't have a whole lot to lose.
Yeah. So when will the X be available? Do they say that?
Next few months. They say
soon?
Yeah. I think by November.
That's another area that's going great guns. I mean, the Galaxy S4. What is that? What are you doing? Is that your belt
trying
buckle?
Trying to find the RFID tag that I swallowed. I'm pretty sure it's in there somewhere.
What if it's not something you swallow? What if it's like a suppository?
Oh, it has to go in one end or the other. That's all I'm saying.
All I know is it's something you want out of your body very quick.
So you swallow this pill.
You swallow a pill.
And then what happens?
You glow.
Basically, I'm not clear on all the details.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think you can like sign in by touching something. Your entire body.
This sounds like it needs more research.
That's like the worst. Like if you.
Well, they gave one of these vitamins to Walt Mossberg.
Walt Mossberg ate one.
Yeah,
he looked at it.
He's also 80, so he won't have any. There won't be any pill. Negative effects on him within any.
Why don't we give him the pill and then put him in the loop?
The person in charge of charge of new projects at Motorola was formerly the head of DARPA.
Wow!
So she comes with a pretty impressive background on this stuff.
This is what if I were Larry Page, and I had more money than God, it's exactly what I would have done with Motorola. Said, "Don't tell us. We don't want to know. Here's $1 billion. Just make something really, really great." That sounds like what they've been charged with.
That's kind of what they said. They can be patient. They don't have to rush, and we'll see. I mean, it's a lot easier to talk about this stuff than to actually do it.
Is this why Google did not announce a new Nexus phone at I.O.? In fact, all they've really said is, well, we're going to make a Galaxy S4 and an HTC One that is pure Google experience. We're not even going to make it. We're going to sell it.
Sundar Pichai was also at D, and he said they will do more Nexus products. They're doing the Nexus
Will they make
phones.
Them, or will they...
I assume it'll be like Nexus has been in the past, where they pick a partner.
Somebody else makes it.
And Google's in charge of the software. But it does seem like a somewhat fuzzy distinction between that and a Galaxy S4 or an HTC One with the pure Google experience.
Right.
But supposedly the Nexus devices will kind of push the limits of hardware.
It'll be made at the Flextronics plant in Fort Worth. They once made Nokia phones there.
Assembled might be a better word
assembled.
Than made.
The phone will be designed, engineered, and assembled in the U.S., but not all the components will be made in the U.S. Processor and screen will be made elsewhere, of course. Wow, that sounds like it might be worth waiting to find out what they're going to do. That's cool.
I came away a little bit more hopeful about Motorola than I had been.
They have not had great phones. In fact, Google's CFO even said that. There's nothing going on at Motorola that we're really excited about. But I think he didn't finish that sentence, but there's going to be. You know, there's nothing we've seen before we acquired them. Pretty exciting. Google says they're going to put Google Play Music and their all-access streaming on iOS in the next few weeks. They needed to do that. It's a pretty compelling platform. I kind of like it. It just makes us wonder, where is Apple? Where is their Apple iRadio everybody's been talking about?
It'll be interesting. I mean, you know, suddenly this space that Apple used to have almost exclusively to itself is getting really crowded. So,
in every respect,
I'm really curious to know how
what can they do,
especially after post Jobs. I mean, this is kind of the litmus test.
This is it right now.
Yeah,
the pressure's on. Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, it's crowded with services which either are successful and losing a fortune or not all that successful. There hasn't been a breakout hit, which has been good both at getting customers and figuring out the business model for subscription.
One thing Google did that I really like, and unfortunately they seem to have lost in court, is fight the FBI. The FBI has sent Google. Well, we think, you know, it's an interesting story because it's all been... what do they call that when you can't speak?
Oh, it's been
so gag here's order. The deal. gag order. The national security letters, something actually has been around since before the Patriot Act, but the Patriot Act really strengthened them. They've been used for some time. They were originally used by the FBI as a way to doing investigations on foreign espionage, basically. They send a national security letter. It's a demand for data, but it's confidential. It's you can't talk about it if you get an NSL. There's been, since the Patriot Act, since 9/11, there's been a huge increase in the use of NSLs, and not just in espionage. According to the Inspector General, the FBI made 50,000 requests in 2006 alone. 50,000 NSLs in 2006 alone. And almost all of them, 97%, had mandatory gag orders. That means you can't even say you got one. Now, so that's why we're not sure. But apparently it's Google that said, no, we're not going to give you the information, and took it to court. They filed a lawsuit on April 22nd. And a judge this week told Google, nope, you got to hand over the data. Now, what's interesting is it's more complicated than all of this, because apparently the Ninth Circuit is reviewing the constitutionality of NSLs in general. And so apparently the judge didn't want to make a decision that would in some way impinge on that ongoing thing. But according to the AP, Google has to comply with the FBI handing over data about a customer or customers, including who the customer is, their address, personal information. In response to a national security letter, you can't say no. Google was fighting it on First Amendment grounds. A little disappointed. Google contested the constitutionality. So the bottom line at this point is, without warrant, there's no warrant, there's no court oversight. The feds can ask for information from Google. They have to hand it over, and they can't tell you that they did. They're gagged.
Certain types of information.
I was a little unclear about this. So sorry. Is this within the framework of the 1986 Computer Security Act?
No.
So this is a whole other level. We don't have to wait 90 days. We just want it now.
Nope. And there's no FISA court involved. There's no oversight at all, and there's no warrant. And the fear is, of course, that the FBI will use this not judiciously, but use it in as a fishing expedition trying to find illegal activity. And the fact that they filed 50,000 of these in 1 year in 2006 is kind of a little bit of an indicator that maybe that's exactly what they're doing.
I think the lack of any kind of judicial oversight is kind of the most worrying aspect.
Because, yes.
You know, ideally you would think that you would put some sort of restraint on it. I mean, even with the whole AP DOJ, I mean, they did get a warrant. For that information.
To get the email records of the AP reporters and trying to track down these leaks.
I mean, granted, it's cold comfort, but it's still, in a way, a lot
better. Hey, if you got to get a warrant, that's a lot better than just saying, hey, give me that information, Google. And by the way, don't mention this. It's just between you and me.
It's a little too behind the wall, I guess.
There's a lot of question marks because of the gag order. We don't know what kind of information the government was trying to get. We don't know who the government was trying to get information on, or if there was one or many. In fact, it wasn't until recently we even knew it was Google. The proceedings are closed to the public.
So, I mean, what's the fallout? Would you say that this would encourage companies to not base in the U.S., even if
well,
they do provide...
Let me ask Padre this, because you cover enterprise technology. Is there some concern about using cloud storage in the U.S. because of this?
Absolutely. I mean, this has been a recurring theme on This Week in Enterprise Tech. We've Brian Chi is a cloud expert. I mean, he's been writing books since its inception. And what we were trying to make people realize is they need to write to the representative, because if you denigrate the security, the supposed security of information in the cloud, if you allow governments to seize it, if you allow governments to take servers, if you allow them to take shortcuts around due process for seizure of information, it kills a multi-trillion-dollar industry in its infancy.
Yeah.
There is no enterprise on this planet that is being responsible about its data that is going to put its information in a place that could be subject to any court ruling about whether or not the government can peek on a fishing expedition. I mean, because remember, what you're talking about is you're not talking about a federal agent coming to a court and saying, we think X company did something illegal, we want to look at this. It's a letter saying, we think there's something going wrong at this ISP, we'd like to be able to look at all their users. There's so many things that are wrong with that,
right,
that it drives the enterprise into getting away from the cloud, putting everything back on premise where I can control it. If you want to get into my data, you have to get into my server room, which is all my property, so I want to see a warrant. Thank you very much.
That's a really good point. Are the protections stronger for stuff that you house in your own environment?
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the cases that came up not too long ago was during the mega case with Kim.com.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get around not having a warrant for individual users, the federal government tried to make the argument that they weren't seizing data, they were seizing servers.
Right.
And the data just happened to be on it.
Just happens to have data on it.
It just happens to have data. If you try to do that in the United States, so I have a business in the United States, say it's in San Francisco. If you want to come on my premise, get into my server closet and confiscate a server, I get to see a warrant before I let you take one step on my property. That's the law. It's just that because it's now in the cloud and my data could be shared with other people on a server that I don't really control or own, that the federal government can now step in and say, well, we weren't really looking for your information.
But
we
look
just
what we
happened
found.
To find it.
But looky here.
Yeah.
That's very depressing. And I think it's unfortunate. But there is some hope, and we'll watch with interest what the Ninth Circuit does. There's some indication that they probably will, in fact, rule these NSLs unconstitutional. I guess the bottom line for me is you should really, you know, there's so many people worried about what Google, Microsoft, and Yahoo know. It's really I'm a little more worried about what the government wants to know than all of that.
It's good to see Google push back.
And I'm really thrilled to see them push back. Absolutely.
Encrypt, encrypt, encrypt.
Yeah.
Trust no one.
Yeah. Google does say they don't want to get in trouble. They're not going to approve any glass applications that have face recognition until there are protections in place. I don't know what that means. Maybe some sort of system where you give permission for me to recognize you?
Perhaps some sort of legal protection so they can never be seen.
Yeah, more like that. I want face recognition. That to me is one of the great values of augmented reality. The idea that I can be looking through glass. It's like straight out of Daniel Suarez's Damon. I can be looking through glass and I can say, oh, you're Roger. I remember you. I worked with you at Tech TV. And
why'd you have to look down?
Right. See, now I can look at my eyebrow and find that.
Why are you staring off to space?
They're worried, I think, a little bit about, of course, lawsuits. They're worried about stalking.
Stalking is the creepiest.
Yeah, privacy invasions and so. Hey, what's the name? What's that girl's name over
so,
there?
So, I mean, the problem with Google Glass is it's on your face the entire time unless you make the active effort to take it off. It's
right.
Not like a phone where, say, you're sitting down and you're eating at a restaurant. And you
but that's what I like about it. It's not surreptitious. People know you're doing it. You could surreptitiously look at your phone. I've been doing that all day.
Uh-huh. Except that you have to turn it on.
Uh-huh. My kids think that we don't know that they're texting when they sit at the table with their hands in their lap and there's this motion going on. Henry, what are you doing? Nothing. You're texting, aren't you? No, 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 I'm not.
Hold on. Period.
Period.
Send. There is a serious side to this, though. There is, back to the reasonable expectation of privacy. Do you have the reasonable expectation of privacy if you're on
in
the
public?
Street,
you're in public.
You're in public. Someone walks by you, is wearing Google Glass, and it happens to face recognize you. It doesn't seem to me that you can make a complaint against that. If you're in public, they could have done that. It would have taken longer if they didn't have glass, but they could have done it if they really wanted to.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that traditionally, when you've dealt with people in that manner, people don't have a perfect memory. So if they see you, it's like, oh, they may not remember you because you have a mustache or your hair's a little different. Now, if you had the same issue with someone who had perfect total recall, they could remember every – I mean, there are people with this ability that could remember every instance at any point in their life and recall it like it was just a second ago. And everyone had that. But it would be kind of freaky because people would know who you are even if you were, what, 8 or 9 and 30 years later. I think that's part of it. It's just now that people have this ability to kind of cross-reference you with this immense database that
Scoble says he put a G+ post up on this. He said, you know, you don't need face recognition. You need fact recognition. So it's not so much your name that I need to find out. It's the ability to go, who the hell is Roger Chang? And have that in my glass. So it's actually the information that's valuable. And he says you can, you know, getting somebody's name is not the hard part. It's then being able to look up the stuff that's so valuable.
Be great for door-to-door salesmen if they're still around.
Yeah. Is the lady of the house home? Oh, I happen to know you're not the lady of the house. You're the man of the house.
Well, you know, this is one of the more troubling things. If you could cross-reference, okay, I know this person, live here. They're single. They work at these hours. I know their house is empty.
Yeah. Let's just get a better lock.
We played with a product at Interop this last year. It was just a project that a bunch of us geeks were putting together. And it was a set of glasses that actually had a bunch of miniature LEDs built into them broadcasting on a non-visible spectrum. If you tried to point a CCD or a CMOS sensor at it would blind the sensor.
You can make that. Colleen was going to make that for me.
Right.
So I could walk around. It blinds cameras. Camera. Yeah, yeah. It's a non-visible to humans, but it blinds cameras.
I see that as being the next growth industry. That's the
next
big Kickstarter.
Idea.
A Google Glass blinder. An anti-Google Glass pair of glasses.
Yeah. You know what? That's really... Because Jennifer never wanted to walk in the studio. She never wanted to have a picture taken of herself. So we were going to make a little collar that she could wear. That she would just be a blob when she came in. It would just be this bright light that comes in the studio.
It's an angel.
It was an idea Colleen had. We never really... never worked out the details. But I think it was a good idea. Yeah, it's an angel. It's a white light.
It's like those RFID blocking wallets that they sell on TV.
Those work.
You just put foil around it.
Yeah. You just have a metal wallet. Google is now putting calorie information in its search. So you can...
So next time I swing by In-N-Out, tell me how many calories I don't need.
I wonder if I just type kale, one cup. Is it? No, see, it's not... I guess it's part of the knowledge graph. But it's not there yet. Although, if you just do a search, you're going to get that information.
Calories of the food. I thought it was how many calories I'm burning by searching.
Let me just put in double animal style. Yeah.
Oh, don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. I love those.
No, those are good, aren't they? That's why you're moving out here, really. It's for double doubles.
Oh, yeah.
Animal style.
I miss them.
Oh, see, now I'm getting pictures and it's just making me hungry.
Oh.
Here's the In-N-Out secret menu. Do you know about that?
Well, double-double animal style, no spread, protein style, which wraps it
that's
in lettuce,
what I eat.
So there's no carbs.
Yeah, it's lettuce instead of... But do you know you can also say chopped chilies and they'll add yellow chilies to the bottom of your burger?
Yes.
You also do the 4x4?
What's 4x4?
Four patties?
Oh, that's disgusting.
I heard they stopped anything above 4x4. So they'll do 3x3, 4x4, but they won't do the bigger ones.
It just got too
people
too
were ordering 12x12s.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you pack that?
M by C refers to a burger with a varied number of meat patties. M by slices of cheese. C. It's a math problem.
See, that's the new thing, is to kind of have that. You have your standardized offering, and then you have that only hip kids can find it.
Here is a picture of a 20x20. If you ever. Wanted to know.
Oh, my goodness.
That guy must have humongous fingers.
Can I tell you a very bad thing about myself? That's making me hungry. It looks good.
You know, that's the thing about American cheese.
Oh, there you go. You search for something that lettuce calories. There's the knowledge graph. Oh, look at that. That's pretty good.
53.
That's really nice. Google's really giving me the information. But nobody searches for lettuce. They search for double doubles.
Yeah.
Nobody ever searches for, how many calories in lettuce? None. Very little.
Yeah, there's no calories in lettuce. You can't digest it. Why would there be any calories?
See, you're getting it and I'm not getting it. You must be in some sort of special program.
That's pretty.
Are you
low
signed
for
into your apps account?
No, I'm signing my regular account. Mm.
Even if you do like
you search for hamburger calories.
Yeah.
254. That seems unusually low.
That's not a double double, I'll tell you that right now.
Double patty.
That's like a hamburger from the 1960s.
Look, they got a drop down, they got a quantity. That's before supersize.
Little drawing of a burger.
It's probably a slider.
Chad, I don't have that. I'm so jealous.
Sorry.
You must be on some special list.
Perhaps.
You must be on the Weight Watchers list.
I would love to have that.
Or deal a meal.
So far, only 1,000 items in there, but presumably more is to come. Let's see. Let's see if you have it.
Although I'm on an iPad, so
Harry's
knows
on an iPad.
Happen.
That's not going to even. No.
Nope.
No. But I'm on Chrome. I don't know. Understand it.
For me, I can't seem to search name brand, so I couldn't search Cheetos.
See, it'd be
calories.
Great to have name brands.
Right. That's or Doritos. Really.
Will it do sushi?
Let me find
the
out.
Next thing is the camera sees what you're eating and just tells you.
Oh, so it'll be like.
By the way,
be like your spouse nag you.
Yeah. Does not do
now,
sushi.
That actually would be awesome if Google Glass could tell me how many calories are in the plate before me. I would feel better as I eat it all.
That's more valuable than face recognition.
We'd also have to keep an accurate record of your diet for length of time to figure out whether or not.
You know, the new Samsung Galaxy S4 has a health companion. That is always monitoring my steps, so it's like a pedometer. And it has a place where you could log stuff. But, you know, the camera should just recognize what I'm eating. I should just leave it, like, hanging out a little bit. And it just should see everything that I eat. Then that would be useful.
Someone in chat mentioned the Happy Fork, which I reviewed. It's the fork.
Yes, that's the silliest thing ever.
Slowly.
You and everybody else reviewed that. You know, there was the smartest thing that I think. I don't know who the PR company was. But they put them in. Robert did it too. They put it in the front of the CES, the opening day Sunday thing.
CES unveiled.
Unveiled. There was nothing else worth covering.
It's the only thing.
They got like 20 minutes from every major, from Time Magazine, from Twitter, ABC, NBC, CBS. It's a stupid vibrating fork. All right, sorry. Do you think the Happy Fork is going to change the world?
You know, I used it for one meal like 6 weeks ago, and I'm still.
It came out.
Eating more slowly with normal forks. So it's possible you don't need to.
It gives you haptic feedback while you're eating. They are selling it now. Oh, it's a Kickstarter now.
They're on Kickstarter.
I tried it.
It's not shipping until later this year.
I just kept eating with the vibrations. I learned to like the vibration on my teeth. So I think the next version needs to actually shock me.
It should be the happy prod.
What happens when you eat something that can't have a fork
with? I can see that thing being hacked in so many ways.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Haswell, Xbox One, and anything else that's on your mind. Good panel for that from Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, Father Robert Ballister, from Techzilla and Revision 3, my friend Roger Chang, and from Techland, the Technologizer, Time Magazine's Harry McCracken. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. This is actually a good time. I think this month is going to be a good month for new products. So you should go look at Gazelle. In fact, this could be your Sunday project as you're listening to the show. Just Gazelle everything in that drawer. You know that gadget drawer you have with all the wires coming out of it, or the closet? Some people have a closet full of old gadgets. Maybe like Dvorak, you have a room above a gas station filled with old crap. You can get some money for that. Maybe a lot of money at gazelle.com. iPhones, cell phones from a variety of manufacturers. They're now taking tablets from not just Apple, but Amazon, Asus, Google, Microsoft, even Surface RT and Surface Pro, Samsung, MacBooks, Macs, iPods. Go over to Gazelle. You want that new iPod Touch that just came out? I bet you do. Let's see how much your old iPod Touch is worth. That's a 32 gig fifth generation iPod Touch in flawless condition. Engraving or personalization? No, I was too cheap to buy that. $107. That's great. I mean, that thing I've had for a while. So here's the deal. Go to Gazelle, and these quotes are good for 30 days. iPhone 4S, $200 right there. That's a new phone right forward there for you. They're good for 30 days. So you can get the quotes. It's not an obligation to sell it to them. It's just, you know, you're going to get the price. When you decide you want to buy, you want to sell, click the box. They'll send you a postage paid box. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. You send it back to them. They turn it around very quickly. Their data experts will wipe the data off, too, so you don't have to do that. They'll even, I've seen this happen time and time again, up your offer. If they say, you know, this is in actually better shape than you said, so we're going to give you more money. And then they will send you a check. You can, if you're in a hurry, and get a PayPal credit, or even, and I like this, the Amazon gift card. That's a good choice if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon because they bump the value 5% on Amazon. So that is a great way to get rid of all these old gadgets so you have some cash in your pocket to buy the new stuff. New stuff is coming. We know that much. And I know another thing. Your gadget's not getting any more valuable. I hate to tell you. So get the price now and then get the gadget, the new stuff, next month. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Haswell is here. Intel announced it at Computex. It is the talk of Intel's TikTok cycle. The tick is reducing the
die size,
the process. They got it down to 22 nanometers. And then the talk is improving the code in there. In this case, they're moving code in for power savings. So they're going to get, they claim, 50% better power on the Haswell chips. They won't say Haswell. You won't hear it. You'll see fourth generation core processor.
But they'll still call it Core i7, Core i5.
You won't know.
Yeah. They don't want you to know.
Yeah, but you do want this if you're getting a laptop because it's 50% battery life. Have you seen any Haswells yet, Robert?
I have, actually. I've got one on its way. The brand new Acer S7 uses a Haswell.
Oh, I hate it. Damn it. I just got that. Oh,
I know. It's brand spanking new.
I swore at a priest. I'm in deep trouble.
But you're talking about DDR4 support. It has lower thermal dissipation requirements, so you don't have to run the fan nearly as long. So that noisy fan from the back of the S7,
that's nice.
That pretty much goes away. Lower power requirements, so it saves power, runs longer on a standard battery. And one of the cool unspoken features is they're starting to move components off the motherboard, like the power regulator.
It's in the chip. Yeah.
It's in the chip now, right? So it allows you to use smaller motherboards and more system on chip type designs.
So this is worth waiting for, it seems like. Also, better graphics processing. The onboard motherboard graphics will be, you know, they say comparable to kind of a low end NVIDIA now.
Right.
So I think this is well worth waiting for. And it is, I have a feeling, what Apple was waiting for. Rumors are very strong. We'll see new MacBooks. Some of the Ming-Chi Kuo or whatever the analyst, that's not her name. Anyway, said that we expect new very thin MacBook Pro Retinas, thin enough that you almost could call them an Air. The 13-inch in particular will be as thin as it can be and still have those connectors on there with Haswell, which means, I don't know, 6 hours, 7 hours of battery life. And there was some interesting news that the Mac Pros are no longer they're going out of stock at some retailers, which indicates maybe there will be a new Mac Pro in
clearing
June.
Out the channel.
I would love to see that.
It's been like 3 years, just about, since the last major upgrade.
I did, in fact, we did it on a Know How episode. I did what I could to make I have the last Mac Pro that came out, which is almost 3 years old. I put an SSD in it. That made a big difference, especially on the Express card bus. That thing is fast. And then I put in a more modern video card in there. And it did make a difference, but it's still not. I mean, it's an older processor at this point.
Well, what's interesting is that, I mean, at least from the preliminary testing that, you know, people have done, is that Intel isn't focusing on performance. They're focusing strictly on battery life and packaging.
I think we've seen kind of almost the end of the line on, I mean, how much faster do we need a processor to be, really?
What's also telling that, you know, Intel is phasing out motherboard production. And so, you know, there's, you know, the eventual, you know, talk of course, you know, what's the new, what does Intel call it? The new processing form factor, basically a new computer form factor that isn't based around an ATX or micro ATX.
Oh, there's something new.
Well, they're developing it, and it was, I'm trying to, oh, crap.
Do you know that what that is, Robert? What the new motherboard form factor is? NUC, NUC. Is that right?
Yes.
What's that? New something something.
No, new unit of computing.
A new unit of computing. Hallelujah. What was wrong with the old unit of computing?
They wanted something smaller, not so...
NUC.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, what's in the...
Ooh, these are cute.
They sell them right now.
They sell them now?
Yeah.
These are, they almost look like hockey puck sized. They look like an Apple TV almost, or a Roku box.
I think the idea is to get away from the legacy of having all these expansion slots and an oversized...
So this might be what a Mac Pro ends up looking like a little bit. Maybe make that an aluminum and have it stackable so you can... I mean, isn't that the idea that you would stack then capabilities up on top of it?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, the XI3, the guys that were showing off the
Those are cool. Was that a NUC?
No, but I mean, it's essentially along the same line where you get... much like you have multiple cores on a die, you have multiple computing units on your desktop. You need more power. You don't upgrade or replace the one. You just add another one.
Maybe that's the future of the Mac Mini.
Well, this certainly looks like a Mini.
Just no drive or no disk drive.
But you could make a Pro this way too, couldn't you? Because what is the point of getting a Mac Pro? It's expandability. It's the slots.
In the old days, you wanted all those slots and drive bays, and, you know, some people still do, but there's not as much need for them anymore.
If they can incorporate Thunderbolt, I mean,
that
eliminates 85% of the expansion issues.
That's your bus. It's basically an internal bus that's external.
I think a four-lane PCI Express.
Yeah. Really? It's four-lane. Wow.
So, I mean, you can get a good deal out of that. Especially when it comes to video editing, which is...
This current NUC is third generation, there'll be Haswell NUCs at some point.
Brian Chi, my co-host on This Week in Enterprise Tech, has been playing with the NUCs and that form factor, and the amount of functionality that he's been able to get off of them, running hypervisor VMs, is astounding. And, it really is designed so that as you need more power, you just stack up a couple of more and you're ready to go.
I love that. And now, of course, Intel's starting to do the fiber optic version of Thunderbolt because they couldn't get that working right away. They were copper only.
They couldn't get it cheap enough. Yeah.
Ah, so they're getting that down.
From what I understood.
Now you got some even more speed. Hmm. And this is amazing. This always blows me away. The tick on this, they will do Haswell chips next year in 14 nanometers. We're getting close to 0 nanometers.
That's where you come into some sort of quantum limitation?
I think we're getting close to the end of Moore's law. I don't know how you can make these much smaller.
Till they do.
14 billionths of a meter. Unbelievable. It's amazing. Asus is going to release a 4K 30-inch display this month.
And there will still be no content to run on it.
It's not just a TV. It's also, it is a TV, but it's, in fact, I saw an ad for Sony's TV on, I think it was on CNN today.
How much do they
want for it? They're pushing it. Well, this is 31 inches, 3840 by 2160. It's a computer monitor. 140 pixels per inch.
But no pricing.
Display port.
Have you seen the Seiki?
The Seiki, we have seen the Seiki. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we have one.
Ryan Schrout opened one, and I was impressed.
Robert Heron was testing
what
one.
What did he think?
For what you pay, he paid it's a, 13 what, something, $1,300
high 4K
display.
UHD display.
I was TV. I was playing BioShock Infinite. Now, this is the thing. At 4K, your frames per second drop below 30.
Yeah, you need pretty healthy.
You won't go past.
You can't because
the TV won't update.
Oh, the HDMI doesn't go that fast.
No,
either.
The TV won't. At
the
4K.
TV won't.
I'm sorry.
Ah, that's right. It's 30 frames per second. Yeah. Yep, that's right.
So, but it was. I was amazed at what you can scale up to 4K, and it still looks great.
Windows 8.1 will support it. This would be another thing to look for in 10.9 next week from Apple. It doesn't currently support UHD displays. But you will need, it says, a triple or quad GPU to drive the damn thing. Wow. I love these super high-res displays. I just think they look fabulous. Who's buying an Xbox One?
I'm going to wait.
Till?
I'm going to wait to see.
The Xbox Two?
No. I'm going to wait about 3 months after everyone either complains,
right,
restock,
right,
and I find out if there are any minor issues with it.
I saw you raise your hand, Robert. You're excited.
I just want to get it because I want to see how quick I can crack the bootloader and load other VMs on the thing.
Oh, aren't you weird? Now,
an enterprise thing.
Microsoft has been, according to Polygon, filed a patent application that talks about what it could do with Kinect. You know, the new Kinect has a 1080p camera watching you all the time, little glowing eye in your living room. And they filed a patent that detailed how Kinect could watch viewers, make sure they're sitting through commercials, and then reward them for watching them with achievements. You watched 15 commercials this week. You get a star.
Achievement unlocked.
Achievement unlocked. I'm going to need to get a Leo-shaped dummy in the house.
Well, it'll be interesting how it tracks.
It can see you. It knows who you are. Amazing.
There's a lot of research going into that by other people, too.
Oh, Lord.
It could tell how excited you are because it can actually see your heartbeat. Because it can actually detect the difference in the coloration of your skin.
So that's how it knows if you're dummy or not. If you don't have a heartbeat, you're not alive.
Oh, man. And TV shows will still be crap.
It can see if you're smiling.
It knows when you're good and knows when you're bad.
Oh, boy.
So it's good for goodness sake.
Joystick says
Brian Bush talked about this on Twiot, and he was saying, and we were talking about how wouldn't it be amazing if Microsoft actually started tracking information about what you look like as you're watching your program.
No.
They could tell people when you got excited.
You just ate your fifth bag of Doritos.
You know what that is? You know what this is, right? It's the ultimate Nielsen box.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stick one. You don't even need to issue out boxes. You just sign up and just say, well, for this between this day and this day, sit in front of your TV.
Oh, Lord.
We'll see what you do, and we'll give you like $20 at the end of the week.
It also knows who you are. So if there are four people in the family, it can tell who's sitting in front of it.
Microsoft's putting $1 billion into games. We're going to hear more about the games. It's a little challenging for us because June 10th, Microsoft's holding its press conference at 9:30 Pacific in the morning. Apple's Tim Cook takes the stage at 10 in the morning. So I think we're going to do coverage on Monday, a week from Monday. I'm going to have stereo. So it'll have Tim Cook in one ear and Microsoft in the other ear.
Whoa.
And split screen.
Blowhards in stereo.
Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to have one of our reporters, Glenn Rubenstein, will be on. He'll be monitoring the Microsoft announcement, and we'll periodically check in with him to see who's having the better show.
You should have a little poll going.
We could. That's a good idea. We could have a meter.
Yeah.
And if the meter tilts one way, we could switch programming over to the Microsoft side or vice versa. Microsoft says we're going to put $1 billion into games, and that's what we'll see, of course, at E3, financing not only new studios but getting exclusives for the Xbox One.
Yeah, they did a really poor job with the initial unveiling.
I think that they knew that this was about non-gamers. Yeah. And then, because at E3, we'll talk about the games. This was for people like me who say, the NFL, and I can have my fantasy team stats on this screen?
I mean, ultimately, sales will determine, what was more successful.
You're more excited about the PS4?
You know what? I'm kind of over both of them at this point because, Steam provides pretty much all the gaming I need and my PC works fine. What I am more annoyed about is that there is no carryover from... I can understand if 360 games don't play, fine. But
of course they're not going to.
Xbox Live games that I bought... I mean, the stuff...
Yeah, but they're written for the PowerPC. It's a different processor.
Well, no, they could at least give you a coupon for anyone who rewrites it.
Oh, I guess they could.
Microsoft isn't competing against Sony. And that's what a lot of people are
they're
realizing.
Not?
They're not. It's not... The One will not compete with the PS4. The hardcore gamers are going to get both consoles.
Right.
Or it's going to be split.
Or they're not going to care. Right.
They're not going to care. Exactly. Yeah. What they're really competing against is Apple. They're competing against the Apple TV. I mean, Tim Cook did make a big push at All Things D, saying how they've sold 14 million Apple TVs, and half of those were this year. But on the other hand, you have Microsoft, who in almost the same amount of time, so in 8 years versus 7 years, will have sold 300 million Xboxes.
Mm.
They want to keep that. They don't want Apple encroaching on their set-top share,
right.
Which, again, is not really... push or pull with Sony, it's going to be push or pull with with the competing devices to get media into your TV. That's what that first press conference was about. TV, like you said, TV, it wasn't TV. For gaming. Well, yeah. I mean, it was TV, TV, TV.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I mean, in a way, I mean, I kind of disagree with you because they actually are competing against each other as well as Apple, but every other kind of set-top box and entertainment device.
You know, it's all competing for your attention. Because, everything's going for your attention.
Because they, because
you only have so much screen time.
At least Microsoft is at the point where they know they're not trying to sell you a box. They're trying to sell you their services. Their box is their gateway to get you to buy stuff.
Right.
And so what they're, I mean, you know, with everyone in digital, they're all kind of jockeying for position in a way to make it the most compelling service that you will gladly subscribe to on an annual basis, and then you zone in on whether it's games, whether it's TV, whether it's sports, you know, whether it's one facet or another. As long as you use their network, use their service, and use their box, they're fine with whatever you do on it.
Right.
I think it's going to be fascinating with the Xbox One to see at whatever price it ends up being whether people who really don't care about games at all or hardly at all will buy it. Because the two most successful TV boxes lately have been Apple TV and Roku. And for those, $99 is the high end of that price range. And unless Microsoft comes up with some really new approach to subsidies, the Xbox One is going to be way more than $99.
It's $500 pretty certainly, right?
I would think $400 at least.
Yeah.
Well, so, but there are rumors, and this will probably be unveiled in a couple of weeks or at E3, is that they might roll in subscriptions. So if you sign up for basically like you do with cell phones now.
You get like Netflix or something.
Yeah, you get Netflix or you get whatever. You sign up for so many years, you get a contract, you get the box at a discounted rate or subsidized rate.
Well, they kind of did that with the Xbox Live subscription, right? You got a $99 Xbox, but you committed to a year of Xbox Live.
And then, of course, all consoles or almost all except for Nintendo are subsidized. To some degree.
Right.
Actually, Nintendo's subsidizing that.
Even Nintendo with the new Wii.
Which is interesting. I mean, you look at the Wii, Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, and they're basically, they look like they're all after the same market, but only, I think, Sony and Microsoft are kind of going after the big picture, whereas Nintendo's, we're still a toy company.
I don't know what Nintendo's up to.
Well, I mean, the thing to understand is Nintendo's a toy company and it always will be a toy company. Sony is an electronics company and Microsoft is software services network company. And they're all approaching how to release your wallet from your hand to their bank account the quickest.
And Sony's big pitch right now is we're the company that cares about gamers and we're not going to try to make it into a Swiss Army knife.
No, they will. Of course, that's the only one they're going to survive.
Did you see this story? Sony's profit center is not electronics. In fact, they lose money on almost everything they sell. You know what keeps Sony afloat? 63% of their profits come from insurance that they sell in Japan.
Well, you know, Samsung, one of Samsung's largest arms is a finance arm. I mean, it's when a company...
But Samsung's making money in consumer electronics. Sony apparently loses money in consumer electronics. They started a life insurance venture in 1981 in conjunction with Prudential. And that's where then they bought a movie studio and a record studio. That was a flop.
But that's not unusual for a conglomerate. I mean, Ford used to have an aerospace division.
Right.
GM still has GMAC. They finance your purchase. I mean, they all get into this business. I mean, Sears and you know, choose any other Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
You need to diversify at some point because, you know, you just can't keep making umpteen number of cars and expect to grow.
Well, in some ways, they're doing the reverse of diversifying. They have one unit that's making all the money.
Well, they have to. They definitely do have to slim down at that point.
Yeah, yeah. All right, one more story, then we're going to take a break. I thought this was from The Onion. On Tuesday, BuzzFeed will unveil CNN BuzzFeed, a YouTube channel based on content from CNN. I'm confused.
I'm going to file a takedown notice.
BuzzFeed, which I thought, and I read it, was like an internet meme engine and a place to see bikini pictures. But apparently CNN feels they're the future of news, and the future of news is on YouTube. This is an example of where media is just confused as hell.
This is an example of people kind of grasping at straws.
Yeah, grasping at straws. Good phrase, yes.
Let me jump on the bandwagon after everyone else got off.
And I think of companies like YouTube, like BuzzFeed saying, yeah, we'll take some of that CNN money. I don't mind. What could be wrong with that? BuzzFeed is trying to establish itself as a news source for 18 to 34-year-olds.
Oh, jeez. Who else was marketing 18 to 34-year-olds?
Everybody wants 18 to 34-year-olds. It's not easy to get them because they're fickle. They're a fickle bunch.
Yeah, because you can't group them that way, 18 to 34.
You're right.
You might as well group people from 20 to 90. Anyone with a pulse, your audience.
A 34-year-old's very different from an 18-year-old. I agree with you on that. An 18-year-old's very different from a 21-year-old.
So it's, I don't know. Sometimes I think people just need a round number or something.
Right.
Jot down.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the podcast troll and some good news. But first, a word from our friends at stamps.com. This is the place to go if you have to mail stuff. Now, this is not if you mail a postcard occasionally to your girlfriend in Japan. You got one nearby, right?
She no longer lives in Japan. Is Australia. No longer my girlfriend.
Okay, we broke up. So we don't need to mail those postcards anymore. So... I just made that up. Oh, I didn't even know if you had a girlfriend in Japan. I just made that up.
I'm just depressing.
But apparently I touched a nerve.
That's fine.
I'm sorry. I had no idea. but maybe you have to send out invoices or marketing material. Maybe you sell little voodoo figures of the girl in Japan on Etsy. Maybe you have...
Potentially.
Maybe you have, I don't know, an Amazon or an eBay selling thing. You know, you're selling old military paraphernalia and memorabilia online. This is a great way to do it because it's kind of like pro-mailing in your own office. You don't have to go to the post office. You don't have to use a postage meter. You don't have to use special inks. You just use what you got, your computer, your printer, and stamps.com. It's postage on demand. You always have the right postage. If they've got a USB scale, you just plop it down so you never pay more or less than you need to. You don't want to send a client a postage due invoice. That's bad form. It'll even suggest what class of mail is right for different stuff. So it really helps you. You can print your logo along with the postage, along with a return address right on an envelope. It'll take the sender's address from your QuickBooks or your address book or any of those websites, PayPal, Etsy, Amazon, eBay. It fills out international forms automatically for you. I mean, I can just go on and on. This is a really great solution for anybody who does a lot of mailing. And then the mail carrier comes to you. You can even schedule free pickup. So you don't even have to get up. They take care of it all. Stamps.com, you probably, if you get mailing at all, you're probably getting it from somebody who uses Stamps.com. We've got a very special trial offer. If you've got a small business, we've been using it for years here. Now, you're going to say, oh, that $80 offer on the front page, that's good. I'll take that. No, click the microphone. In the upper right-hand corner, here's a little secret path. Type in the promo code TWIT, and that $80 special offer goes to $110 offer. $55 in free postage for the first few months of your account. You get the digital scale, the USB scale. You get a supply kit and a four-week trial of Stamps.com. It really is a great deal. Cancel it anytime. The scale is yours to keep. Stamps.com, it's the pro tip for anybody who does a lot of mailing. Stamps.com, give it a try. Today. So some good news. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, I think this was on Friday, decided to get involved in the Save Podcasting movement, and I wanted to mention that. Now, a number of companies have been sued. We have not, by a podcast troll called
Personal Audio,
LLC. Interesting story behind this company. They have a recent patent. It's only a few years old, but it was based on a patent that came out in 1996. And EFF believes, as I do, that the patent that they got in 1996 is bizarre and bogus. It's basically they patented the playlist. And so what EFF has decided to do, and I think this is the right attitude, is not to fight them in court, but to go to the Patent and Trademark Office. This is another defense if you get involved. I've learned a lot about this in the last few months. If you get involved in a patent case, you can go to the Patent and Trademark Office if you have prior art and say, you know what, this was a bad patent. You should never have given this patent, and here's why. And so they have raised some money, raised quite a bit of money. They said they needed $30,000 to do this inter partes challenge of the patent. In under 10 hours, they raised the $30,000. They're now at $60,000. With 1,000 supporters, we put in $2,500 because it could save us a lot of money in court costs if this goes through. I encourage you to visit EFF.org. If you want to give a buck, a couple of bucks, help support this. They are gathering prior art right now. In fact, if you look at the website, there is a button that says Save Podcasting Prior Art. that it goes to Ask Patents at patents.stackexchange.com. And they've already collected, I think, some very significant examples of pre-1996 playlists, audio subscriptions, things like that. It's pretty obvious to anybody who's been in this business that podcasting wasn't invented in 1996, that it's been around for a lot longer. It's a bad patent. I've always thought it was a bad patent. And a number of our friends have been sued, like Adam Carolla. Instead of, you could fight it in court, but I think the best way to do this and save podcasting for everybody is to just get the patent overturned. So help EFF do that. I have very high hopes of this. When I looked at the prior art, I thought, yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Remember they did that? Oh yeah. It's pretty obvious. It goes way back, way, way, way back. So
this case is interesting because it's not a typical patent troll. Most patent trolls are NPE, non-practicing entities that never made anything, never tried to make anything. All they did was they acquired a bunch of patents and then they go out and they sue people. Personal Audio actually is a failed maker. They tried to make a podcast device, an MP3 player. And in the process of doing that, they filed for what is now what we know is an incredibly vague patent that should not have been granted. So on the one hand, yeah, they're absolutely a patent troll. On the other hand, they're not. Their lineage isn't that of a patent troll.
Okay, I'm going to argue with you a little bit. So the guy in 96 who got this patent is supposedly part of this company, but that's very common with patent trolls. You go to the original patent inventor and you say, hey. They are truly a non-practicing entity in the sense that they never made anything. And they currently are not a practicing entity. So, you know, you could debate what a patent troll is, but it's pretty clear that the companies that are doing this at this point are doing it to make money off of what was clearly a bad patent. Not trying to make money by making something, but trying to make money by people like us and other podcasters who are using something that's very obvious technology. The Cyber Law Clinic at Harvard's Berkman Center is going to participate in this with the EFF. That encourages me. You've got some pretty heavy hitters on this. Of course, the company is going to say, well, no, you know, we made something, but I don't think that's really the case. And they're going after, they say, we're just going after NBC and CBS, big companies. No, they're going after everybody.
And well, they went after Apple and they got an $8 million settlement.
Different patent.
That's their war chest, right?
Yeah, but it was a different, completely different patent. So, I've done a little research into this because I've been curious what's going on, and I'm encouraged by it. If you want to support it, I think the best thing to do is read more about it at EFF.org. I'm an ongoing contributor to EFF, but I thought this was a good one to give them a little extra money, and we were glad to help them do that. I don't know how long the inter partes process takes. When we talked to our attorneys, we actually hired a very good law firm that does deal with this specific subject in kind of a defensive way. They said that this is a good approach as long as it works. And the patent office is a little unpredictable. But after looking at the prior art, I think there's a very strong case here. So help the EFF. It would help all of us and preserve what I think is a very important medium for us all. Hey, if you missed anything, as an example, if you missed anything this week, this is the kind of stuff that we did that we'd like to keep doing. Here's what you saw this week.
Previously on Twit, Matt Break Weekly.
It's not a gadget, it's jewelry.
It doesn't have to, jewelry. Well, how about just a cool watch?
A cool watch is jewelry.
So if I go upstairs and get my Millennium Falcon wristwatch, the one that has like a die-cast Millennium Falcon, like a pocket watch, we have to pop open the top. Would you identify that as jewelry or as a cool watch?
Well, that's something else, but I don't think they're going to sell a Millennium Falcon watch.
It's a cool watch.
NSFW.
Allie Gertz.
Can I give you a bite?
She was great.
'Cause you're special to me. Can I be so crazy for you? I need an hour beat. Show me your best boy fight. Give me your brownie afternoon delight.
Triangulation.
I mean, it's a possibility, but I would argue it's a remote one. You know, neuroplasticity is real. You know, a kid who's raised playing with Barbies is going to have a different kind of brain than a kid who's raised playing exclusively with Legos or with video games or with an iPad. But, you know, the range of neural outcomes is kind of limited. You know, and so far anyway, we haven't really seen anybody who can be in more than one place at the same time.
Great interview. Twit,
broadcasting from the capital of the free world, Petaluma, California.
Not commonly known, but it is, in fact, the capital of the free world. He was great. Douglas Rushkoff, if you didn't see that triangulation on Wednesday, really interesting guy. We were talking about the idea that humans could adapt to this hurry-up world we live in. No.
No.
Yeah. You don't believe that?
No.
No. No. Everybody says no. Must listen. Every single week we do a great, we have so much fun with triangulation. And thanks to the brilliant Jim Cutler, by the way. We don't credit him enough. He's the voice of those promos. And he comes up with those funny tags at the end, right, Chad? I don't think we send them to him.
He no, just he's, says them. He can ad-lib like no
so
one
good.
Else.
You remember Jim from Tech TV? He was the voice of Tech TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Really great guy. One of the best booth announcers in America. This guy does work for all the big companies, and he donates his time to Twit.
Yeah, super professional, too.
Jim, we love you. Mwah! Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Harry McCracken, the technologizer, time.com, techland.com. And thank you for making Twit one of the 50. I know you recused yourself, but you must have given him some money under the table or something.
We're happy you're happy.
Thank you, Harry. Great to see you and Marie again. Thank you, Roger Chang. I'm sorry about the girlfriend, but I'm glad things are going well at Techzilla.
Yes. They're doing fine.
Jolly Roger on Twitter, which you must follow, and at Jolly Roger, and, of course, Techzilla.com.
Yes.
T-E-K-Z-I-L-L-A.
Oh, you say Zed.
I say Zed because I feel it's more clear that way. Also, thanks to Father Robert Ballister. We'll be moving out here soon. Every noon on Monday, he's here, 3 p.m. Eastern time, 2000 UTC. He's here to do This Week in Enterprise Tech, which is a great show. We love it. We're working on a programming show, computer programming show with Robert. I can't wait. Robert's going to teach Shannon Morris how to program.
Oh, nice.
Is that awesome? You up for
There's
that, Robert?
A lot of stuff in the tube. Oh, absolutely.
All right.
The next couple of months is going to be amazing for Twit.
I can't wait. We're very excited.
Lots I gave up on programming in college.
Well, this will be good for you. We're going to do different units. Every 8 weeks, a new unit, new programming language.
Two semesters of C#.
No wonder.
What? At the time?
That's not a good starting language. It's a good language. It's a great language, but not a good language to start with. No, maybe C would have been better even than C#. What are you going to start? What's your first line? We're going to do Python?
We're probably going to do Python.
I'm lobbying for Python.
I've got an expert in Python who is willing to come into the studio and do some great demonstrations with us.
I'm of the opinion Python is a great starter, first language.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. You know, we thought about Java for a while.
No, I vetoed that.
No, I loathe Java. But,
I vetoed that. Yeah. I said, we are not. You know, my kids' high school, that's the programming language they teach. And I think it's true in a lot of high schools. And it's like, no. It's a very bad thing to start with, I think. Eventually, you'll need to learn it. Lots of people hate Python, too, apparently. I'm seeing the chat room go crazy. So, thank you, Robert. Thank you, Harry. Thank you, Roger. Thank you for being here. We're glad you watched. If you can watch live, do. It's fun. 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2300 UTC on twit.tv. But if you can't watch live, don't worry. You can always get on-demand audio and video after the fact on our website, twit.tv. Or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, distributed, according to the rules established many years ago by the fathers of the Internet. That would include iTunes and the Zune Marketplace and Xbox as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Twelve by 12. What about that for a title, huh?
Now
I'm hungry. There is an In-N-Out very near here.
Yes.
On the way out of town, as Robert knows.
I went
to it yesterday.
It's not good.
It was great.
Don't go there.
You know, I've always been a little surprised at the almost slavish following that.
Are you a Five Guys guy?
I actually don't like most hamburgers, just because I always find them to be overcooked or really greasy.
That's what I like about an In-N-Out. Overcooked
and
greasy.
I'm going over to Ray's Hellburger.
Ooh, that sounds good. Is that in D.C.?
Yeah. It's in Virginia. It's the place that Obama gets his burgers.
Oh. Does he like send out the Secret Service? Do they like show up at Ray's Hellburger?
No, he shows up.
POTUS
shows
would up like a sack of double doubles.
I've always wondered, like, wouldn't they? Do they have a food tester that just like sticks a meter in it and makes sure it's not?
Wait, you're saying President Obama goes to Ray's Hellburger and orders one?
They have a picture of him showing up, ordering his burger, and I'm believing that the restaurant was populated by Secret Service people.
Even the guy behind the counter.
Don't eat that.
Is that where he asked the guy if he wanted fries?
I like Five Guys. Have you been to Five Guys?
Yes.
I like Five Guys. You know what I really like? We don't have them out here. It's Steak and Shake.
Oh, I hate
Steak and Shake.
Actually, I've never tried it, but looking at their menu, I think I would.
It's very good.
I don't like their teeny tiny fries. Tried it.
Will you agree with me that White Castle is disgusting?
I love White Castle. You need White Castle. Talk about overcooked and greasy. It's the best. My freezer's full of White Castle hamburgers.
Yeah, but you had your start in fast food, so you know.
I know. I've worked in fast food. I know the business very well. Yeah, I still have calluses on my fingers here from flipping the burgers. That was the old days.
You know, it's odd that you mentioned, because every now and then when I get really bored, for some reason I look up training videos on YouTube, and I came across an old Wendy's one where they basically taught the guy how to cook by using a rap video. It was great.
Oh. You got to put your food in the fridge. Here we go. Here's hot drinks.
There's one that's like,
is it the 80s
when
one?
When you stirring up the chili.
No, this sure is it. Hot drink.
No. The, I think
the chili? Like
this one right there.
1980s Wendy's training video. Good Lord. From file cabinet.
I'm not hearing it.
Put it in the microwave, and we're done.
Are you plugged in?
I am. You're seeing it, but you're not hearing it, huh?
Yeah, I'm not even.
Why am I having so much trouble? It must be Linux. It's all the way up. That's what's odd.
What is that one called?
It's a 1980s Wendy's training video.
Oh, wow.
Here, wait.
Wow.
Already I'm enjoying it.
I have a special place for those because when I worked at the Olive Garden for all of 3 weeks, they gave me a video on how to bus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The training is very important when you have minimum wage workers. We never had anything this good at McDonald's. This is psychedelic.
And I think they had videotape. That tapes for training.
Grill skills. I can't even understand it.
Now he's in the video.
It looks like a microwave.
This stuff is great. It's like gold.
It's like for my nightmares.
And MC Hammer has really come down a long way. 250 with the meat and cheese that's ready to go. A towel to keep your station looking cool. But most of all, you got to have your tool.
Most of all, you got to have your tool. Get ready. We're going to lay them down. Now, beats got grain to it just like wood. You got to follow the arrow to lay it down like you should. From the front to the back, you got to lay it down. Face it evenly, not scattered around. Next, you got to salt the meat from the back to the front to make the taste complete. Not too little, not too much. Oh, my God.
Oh, this is too much for me.
This is good. Coming up next is our key to success. We'll turn the meat and do a four-corner press. Don't wait too long, I emphasize, or the meat won't reach the proper size. When things start to sizzle, you're ready to go. Gently turn the meat, but don't be slow. Just turn them over easily. Now, of course, it's all automated. Even at McDonald's, they have machines that do this. They don't flip it anymore. Are you keeping score? Yeah, you gotta press the grease out of it. You'll get a patty that's out of sight. Press out the corners. I know meat had grain just like wood.
It does, but not when you grind it.
I've learned a lot here. When the meat hits the grill, it starts to shrink. We start shrinking. What? Oh, the singing patties. When you see red juices on the top of the meat, it's time to give the turn and press a repeat. God, they're pressing all the flavor out of it. Never do that. That's because it's filled with water, probably, right?
Probably, like, super fatty meat. They also do that because they don't want to get sued for giving salmonella to anyone.
Right.
Until now, I love
blood out of it. When the meat's red juice no longer rise, you can serve that patty, it'll win a prize.
cook. But just to make sure you can have a look. Use your tool and double check. It should be gray and moist to be correct.
Gray and moist.
Gray and moist? Did he say that?
Yeah.
Gray and moist.
Once the draining is totally done,
glad I didn't take acid before I saw this.
You give it a shot. Don't be afraid. I think you're going to be...
What? Going to be what?
What? What am I going to be? What? Oh, green and moist.
Not green, gray.
Oh.
Gray and moist.
Gray and moist.
That's the title of this week's episode.